The following show is dedicated to Mia Park and Barbara Yang. The views expressed on the following show may not be those of the hosts, guests, or WSPN Skidmore Radio. Talk Saratoga is produced by Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated and may not be reproduced in part or in whole unless expressed written approval is given. Now, here are the hosts of Talk Saratoga, Rick Thompson and a Saratoga All-Star.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Saratoga on this second day of spring. And we've got snow out there, and we're not supposed to get any accumulation, I don't think, just snow flurries for this morning, then it's supposed to clear up and be cloudy. But I want to welcome you here. You're listening to WSPN 91.1 FM Skidmore Radio, and if you have a question during the show, give us a call, 518-580-5783. I know people get nervous about calling in, so we don't get many, but if you want to, give us a call. Anyway, my guest today is a really special guy, and we had a nice talk before the show about a lot of different things. Mark O'Rourke. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Rick.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm glad it's the weekend.
Yeah, I know. I can imagine. Now, you're an attorney, correct?
I am. I'm still admitted to the bar, but I don't practice.
You don't practice. Sure. Okay, because I was going to say, I mean, thank goodness it's the weekend for you, because...
yes.
So... You are in the process of, you're a producer and managing member of a group of people, and you're involved in making a movie, correct?
Yes.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, first of all, okay?
Well, first, thank you for the opportunity, and to your audience, good morning as well. I love upstate New York, although I'm from Long Island, New York. We always vacationed as a kid up in Lake George, and we had a small farm near Cooperstown, and I also in the Scouts, I'm an Eagle Scout, we would always go to the either the Catskills or even actually to the Finger Lakes or, of course, up to the Adirondacks. So I had a great affinity for the upstate region as a kid. And so I love living in the Saratoga area. I have since 2005. So I'm an Army veteran, and 56 this year. The years are rolling by. It's hard to believe we're 6 years past now COVID.
Oh, tell me about it.
So, I really look forward to the discussion this morning.
Yeah. Did COVID interrupt your movement here as far as the work you're doing?
I think COVID, we all had to adjust, right? You could no longer have in-person meetings. And we did. We all pivoted to using the various technologies available to us and to continue the march. Even with my day job, I cover a multi-state region, and without Zoom or MS Teams, we would have been lost, and it was remarkable. But for the project, for the film project, which we'll talk about, we had different work streams, and those still had to go forward. Yeah. So you had to be resourceful.
Oh, yeah, but it wasn't like being together at a meeting, though.
No, there's no substitute, as everyone knows, for face-to-face.
Right.
The camaraderie personal that comes from that and all the body language and just the collegiality.
Yeah, I'm on the board of a credit union, and we had Zoom meetings, and I'm involved in Kiwanis, and they're not the same. I mean, it was... didn't even feel like getting on, actually.
But I do think, as all would probably concede, that the isolation that came from COVID and being sequestered, I was up in the Adirondacks with my elderly parents, but thank goodness for the technologies, because it did allow us to interface, I think, in a meaningful way with other people, which, perhaps 100, the Spanish flu pandemic of 100 years earlier, you really would be quite isolated.
Sure.
Yeah.
I feel bad, and this has nothing to do with our subject, so I don't want to stay on it too long, but I feel bad for the kids because they couldn't graduate. They go to school for 12 years, and they couldn't graduate in a normal fashion.
Yes.
And I think being isolated, even for adults, it changed your life. And quite frankly, I don't think it's come back yet.
No, I just a quick reply. I have 8 nieces and nephews in their 20s, and a number of them, their junior and senior years of high school were interrupted, proms, and then also, the start into college and orientation and the like, where they spent the first year doing it remotely. And I had a very full and wonderful high school and college experience, and I really did feel for them because those were formative years.
Yep.
And those relationships you build are paramount.
Exactly. And you can't get them back.
No.
That's the problem.
Time is precious.
Yeah. Let's talk about the project.
Yeah.
Back when I met you a couple of years ago, you were still in the process of getting to the point where you wanted to be. Are you there yet?
Well, we need, and to your audience, I am a person of faith, but even if you're not, we do need a miracle. And for some, you know, I think the belief is that miracles require faith. And the reason I say that is that this, you want to think big, you think boldly. This is not an easy undertaking, any film project, or especially an independent film project. And let me go back to the inception of why I think always, as an Army, former Army officer, you want to give people in the mission the why. And so the why was, I'm a romantic, I'm a history major and from college, and I, like all, many of your listeners, care deeply about this region and its history and our nation. And I used to cycle a great deal over at the Saratoga National Historical Park, the Saratoga Battlefield, which is quite beautiful and inspiring, even if you don't know the history that occurred there. And although I certainly had a strong grasp of U.S. history generally, I was wholly ignorant of really the battles of Saratoga and their significance in the Revolutionary War. Even though my Boy Scout troop from Long Island, one of the oldest troops, Troop 8 in the nation, we would go once a month to a major historical site throughout the Northeast, but we never came to Saratoga. And as a kid, I, of course, had been to Fort Ticonderoga numerous times. But the bottom line is that as I visited the visitor center and learned about all the signage and the like, I couldn't help but be astonished at the significance, the singular importance of this region. And so I just couldn't believe that this was not the subject of a meaningful motion picture. I love movies, and we also knew, and we commend Ken Burns for the series that he's done on the Revolution recently, but we knew he would likely come into this space. He mastered the genre, but we didn't. I feel that this should be the victory at Saratoga should be the subject and focus of a major motion picture, because it's you know, absolutely seminal to our history.
Yeah, so, and Tim Burns is not from the area where you are, and a group of the guys that are working with you, so you have more of a closeness to the conflict, the war.
Rick, that's a great point. I am a proud New Yorker, and I don't think that New York should be second fiddle to anyone. And just a quick plug, I'm fortunate to be the president of the Friends of the New York State Military Museum, the nonprofit that's the educational, financial, and programmatic pillar of support to the museum. And your listeners may know, but New York's military history is second to no other state. The service and sacrifice over the generations is unrivaled. More combatants and more killed in action from the Revolution, but to the Civil War, World War I, and World War II, New York paid the dearest price. And of course, New York's industrial might was often either very consequential or determinative during those conflicts. And so we have more Medal of Honor winners from New York State than any other state. The Purple Heart was created in New York, and I could go on and on.
Sure.
But for the Revolution, to your point, we know that New England, they're good troublemakers.
Oh,
New Englanders.
Yeah, sure.
No, I'm a Yankee fan, so I say that with a little bit of jest.
I am too.
So, but no, we're very grateful to our fellow Americans in New England that started the Revolution. But this is the point for New York, and this is the sort of the why. When you study this history, and I hope the younger generations will, because sometimes they've been made to be a little bit jaundiced towards their history, and they shouldn't be. This is the great experiment. The American experiment is one that needs to be revisited. It is fragile with each generation, and we hand the torch of liberty, that baton, to each one. But the Revolution was saved in upstate New York in late 1776 and throughout 1777. And just to further plug, and not just in Saratoga County, and many of your listeners are probably quite astute to this end or this subject, but whether it was at Valcour Island up in Lake Champlain in late 1776, but all through the sacrifice in the Mohawk Valley that occurred out at Fort Stanwix and Oriskany, and then into the upper Hudson Valley, and then down to West Point, this area was the focus of the hostilities. And I'll just add quickly that between the two battles of Saratoga in late September of 1777 and early October, you know, Philadelphia, the nation's capital, fell, and it was the largest city at the time. Mm-hmm. And as your listeners may know, the one-year date to the date prior, New York City had fallen. So when the battles of Saratoga occurred, the nation's two largest cities were under occupation. So if General Burgoyne, the British general, if he prevails and at both the two battles, and which fortunately he did not, and he was decisively defeated at the Battle of Bemis Heights on October the 7th, but if he wasn't forced to surrender and if he had been able to take Albany, the British would have likely have controlled the entirety of New York.
Sure.
And it would have been the beginning of the end. Historians can debate, but it would have been a near knockout blow.
Oh, yeah. Now, wasn't it an error on his part why he was defeated? He didn't want any more men? Or am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely tracking. And I want to first pause and give great credit to, well, Saratoga County, the Board of Supervisors. They have a terrific endeavor, an initiative that's been ongoing since 2022. It's the Saratoga 250th Commission and has a companion of the campaign for Saratoga. And they're marshaling a lot of the living historians and reenactors to really accentuate in this history, but also to the staff at the Saratoga National Historical Park with the National Park Service, and then the historians, and I'll name a few. And the one that was involved with our project that unfortunately passed away in late 2024, Dr. James Kirby Martin. And we talk about Eric Schnitzer, who's a ranger at the Saratoga National Historical Park. And then, of course, and he's a retired Army colonel, Kevin Weddle. They've all written, and there's many others, have written wonderful books on this topic. But General Burgoyne, just studying General Burgoyne himself and his persona and all that he brought to the table is a subject of great scholarship. But my grandparents were all from Ireland, so I say this with a little bit of bias. Fortunately, with the British generals in the U.S., there was hubris and arrogance. And they also... they think boldly. They're great strategists, and they were certainly very competent as military leaders. But often they underestimated the totality of the great expanse of the terrain, the geography of North America, and all that goes with that. And Burgoyne, there was great audacity. And I think he just greatly underestimated all that would be required to prevail. And he underestimated his foe, his enemy.
Yeah, I think over the centuries before, England always was top in military. I mean, they had it down to a science as far as how to win wars. And when they came over here, like you said, they didn't realize how hardy of a people we were.
Right.
And how we could, you know, we had a lot of guerrilla warfare that they never knew how to combat. And but one of the things, too, I think people don't realize this because he ended up becoming a traitor, but Benedict Arnold, I think, saved this part of New York with his Navy experience. He was one of the best admirals that America had, which stopped a lot of ships coming down from Canada and could have really made a difference with the British and us.
Yeah, he was very competent in many regards. And for your listeners, you know, he's one of the most fascinating figures in American history because his leadership skills were, you know, self-evident. He greatly inspired soldiers to always push them far beyond what they thought they were capable of. And he was quite heroic. And he also was, from his days in Rhode Island and the like, in Connecticut, seafaring. And he took on great tasks, whether going the invasion of Canada and the Battle of Quebec, and he just spurred the soldiers underneath him to do more than they would have otherwise been willing to do. And he was seemingly everywhere early on in the Revolution. His track record was, you know, almost unrivaled.
Yeah.
So, but then, you know, later came his later treason, which we can discuss perhaps later.
Sure. I want to back up just a little bit. In the movie, that you're constructing. Do you go back as far as the French and Indian War? Is that a prequel?
Absolutely. Well, we touch upon it because it sets the table. You know, the forces that were at play for the control of North America really, really does inform much of what occurred during the American Revolution. You had originally the Dutch influence, but the French, and then the British, and even the Spanish, and of course, with their interface with the Native American population, the indigenous population, and the control of the continent's resources and its waterways and the like. And so this was this vast struggle for this, you know, very, very rich in resources continent. And so that absolutely, and of course the French, the humiliation of losing the French Indian War, and they were, of course, risk averse. And so although they were sympathetic to the American cause, I think the challenge for the colonists or the British called them the rebels, but the patriots was, could they demonstrate to potential allies like the French that they were more than a rabble, and that they're not just a bunch of disgruntled colonists dealing with some tax policy, but there really was an enduring fervor for freedom and liberty.
I had mentioned to you before about French and Indian War. I grew up in an area where that was more pronounced because of a fellow named Sir William Johnson, who was English, but at the time had pretty much total control through being named the Indian agent of most of the Native Americans reaching back to Michigan and, you know, all the way out to the Midwest. And they used to come down the Mohawk River and have their big meetings in Canjoharie. And, I mean, he dressed up as an Indian and ended up marrying, a chief's daughter. But so he was very influential in getting the Indians from that area up here to fight the French, and ended up getting wounded. And of course, this, you know, the story about the baths, the water here in Saratoga, which he attributed to saving his life.
High Rock Springs, sure.
Yeah, High Rock
really
Springs.
The very beginnings of Saratoga.
Yeah.
Sure.
So I think he played a big part in helping save the area so the Revolutionary War could, be a big deal in this area here.
And Sean Keller, who is the vice chair of the Saratoga Commission, and he's also a historian out in Saratoga, the local historian. He covers this in his podcast and past paths, if you will. And he covers this in great detail, very thoughtfully. But the Johnson family was venerable in the area, and as you may know, and your listeners may know, the Iroquois Nation, the British were largely aligned with the British during the Revolution, but the two parts of the Iroquois Nation that did side with the American cause were the Oneida and the Tuscarora. So, and that all flowed from the loyalties and the relationships that went back to, indeed, the Seven Years' War, the French-Indian War. And I should add, before the railroads, I think upstate New Yorkers have a great mind for the very complex geography and topography of upstate New York. But it was the waterways, Lake Champlain up to the St. Lawrence, but and down into the Great Carrie area of Fort Edward, and then to the Hudson River, and of course the Mohawk River down
right
to the Atlantic. It informed and guided major decision making, and it was indeed, and logistics.
Sure,
sure.
And we were kind of a main thoroughfare for soldiers to go up north, because, you know, from Albany through Saratoga up to Canada, this was an important area for that.
Absolutely.
But, we're lucky our area played a big part. Now, Washington didn't do much in this area, though, correct? I mean, he fought mainly in the city in New Jersey.
Now, I'm glad you asked that question, because that is, that was my understanding for some time, but this is where I want to give a plug. Well, Eric Schnitzer covers this in his book that he did with Don Troiani, that was published in 2021, but also with great care and detail by Colonel Dr. Kevin Weddle in the book The Complete Victory, has won a number of major awards. Washington's guiding hand was indeed very much involved with the events of 1776 and 1777 in upstate New York and the outcome. And here's why. And I of course, would love for you to have Colonel Weddle and perhaps even Eric Schnitzer and others on in the future. But I'll try to do it with great clarity and brevity. First, Washington was himself facing off against General Howe in the spring and summer. He knew that likely the target or focus was going to be the Continental Capital of Philadelphia and even Washington's main army itself. General Howe wanted to destroy Washington's main army, and that would then deal a death knell or death blow to the revolution. But Washington had matured greatly after a lot of errors and defeats early on to become much more of a commander-in-chief by this point. And he knew that he had to meet likely an emerging two twin threats in 1777, and that was indeed General Burgoyne coming down from Canada, and they didn't know whether he was going to go back perhaps into New England or come down the Hudson and focus on Albany, but then, of course, Philadelphia. And what Washington did, he did a call to arms through a number of leaders in New England, but Major General Benjamin Lincoln and others, saying that they knew that the Continental Army, the American Army that was entrenched in upstate New York, needed to be fortified. And he did send artillery from his own artillery train to help fortify, but he sent one of his most able battlefield commanders. It was his decision to send Benedict Arnold up to augment the American Army up north, and General Schuyler was in charge until the fall of Fort Ticonderoga. That fall of Fort Ticonderoga in July of 1777 is what prompted the dismissal of Schuyler and then the putting in General Horatio Gates in charge of the Northern Department. But then Washington also, it was also through the Continental Congress that Colonel Thaddeus or Thaddeus Kosciuszko was sent north for his engineering expertise and a number of other things. And I should mention, along with General Benedict Arnold being sent, Colonel Daniel Morgan and his rifle corps and sharpshooters, those were Washington's decisions.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about Daniel Morgan and his men. It seemed like, I don't know, farmers and regular people who fought the Revolutionary War were inspired by certain people like Daniel Morgan and the other professional soldiers, if you want, and even a lot of the war, maybe not a lot, but some of the war was fought in Vermont with Nathan Hale. I think didn't he lead a guerrilla team that? And I think the British didn't know how to put up with that. It was an amazing thing of common people becoming unbelievable.
That is what Americans have to, I like to quote Ronald Reagan at times, and he reminds Americans never to forget their heroic origins. And some people always, you know, want to define our history as complicated. Well, it may well be, but it's also heroic.
Yeah.
And we should not have won the American Revolution by all accounts. But why did we win? Courage and grit and honor and sacrifice and great and it was perseverance and resiliency and determination. Yeah. But also there was a great, we did go from being individual colonies to states to a nation via the American Revolution. The great New Englanders were not close with Virginians before this cause. We had great differences, religious, cultural, and otherwise.
Sure.
But this event was unifying for the nation because there was an adherence to many things that united us in custom and faith and then, of course, commitment to liberty. And so you touched upon the Green Mountain Boys and Ethan Allen and what they did with Benedict Arnold. Thank goodness that they had whomever decided we're going to take the fort in early 1775. That became so consequential for your listeners because, again, there was a great commemoration now, the 250th anniversary of the noble train of artillery, but Colonel Henry Knox made the commitment to General Washington during the Boston siege. And to think about this great first of all, as an idea, it was very daunting and very also audacious to go through the Berkshires and up to the Adirondacks and to get all of the cannon from Fort Crown Point and Fort Ticonderoga and then timely haul them back to Boston so that General Washington and the American forces could deploy them in a you know, very convincing way, credible way to prompt the evacuation of Boston by the British.
And we didn't have semis to haul those heavy cannons back either. So
and I again, there is a multi-state effort where, including the Saratoga 250th Commission and others, through the various counties in New York State, Washington County and Warren County, et cetera, but even including the counties in Massachusetts, and they've done a remarkable job, and they have a short film that's featured on PBS that was just released on this, about a 20-minute or 30-minute film, but it shows the grit, the tenacity, the resourcefulness for all that was done, the teams of horses and oxen, and it was soldiers and it was citizens that collaborated to enable this to occur.
Yeah.
It's a great story. It's one of the greatest stories in American history.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that time period of history, I think, is one of the best, you know.
And if we could pause, this is what should resonate with your listeners. We're all still upstaters, we're New Englanders,
yep,
with great grit, and this is in our DNA, and this is who we are as Americans.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody else in the country can understand that or have the feeling that we do.
Well, you have to walk the ground and see the rolling hills or the mountains or the rivers.
The woods,
and then know what black flies are and mosquitoes,
yeah,
and humidity, and the conditions, the harsh winters, and right. This was not for the faint of heart.
No, right. It wasn't. And one of the other things is that you talked about bringing the states together. It's almost like, and I don't want to draw the same analogy, but 9/11, it brought the country together.
Yep.
So there's something in us that when there's something that we have to fight to get, that brings people together.
And for your listeners, just to know a little bit more about me, I'm a kid from Long Island. My parents are from New York City, and my dad is, I'm the son of a retired New York City fire chief. He did 37 years, and he retired right before 9/11. And all he did was very involved with notifying next of kin and going to many of the funerals. My older brother is a retired police detective from New York City, and he worked in the morgue at Ground Zero in the immediate aftermath. And I lost 12 friends that day. My dad knew many of the firefighters that were lost, so it was deeply personal. And I also had been in Army intelligence. I was a junior officer in the Military Intelligence Corps, and we were very much involved in tracking Al-Qaeda and what they had done to our American interest or bases overseas, and where they had been attacking us in the late 90s. And then, of course, that threat came to the homeland on September the 11th. So it's deeply personal for all Americans. But I think that is a great analogy. And here, I also want to give a plug. Let's pause for a second. It's astonishing to think that this is the 25th anniversary of 9/11 is approaching.
Amazing.
And we all remember us that were alive, that where we were that day.
That's right.
And it was, we were Americans together again, united. And I think it is a great, I think that's most instructive for your listeners, is that that was the probably, although there was, it was also a civil war during the Revolution, the differences between many of the colonists who were loyal, would be characterized as loyalists versus patriots. But thank goodness the patriot cause won out, and I think there were a lot more patriots than loyalists. But I think it was a very unifying event overall, and a commonality of purpose.
Yeah, how important were the Indians and Germans to the revolutionary cause?
Well, I think if you look at what the British did, the British were very keen to have alliances with the Native Americans and indigenous population because, one, they wanted to strike fear in the heart of the patriots, and I think sometimes they used very brutal tactics in that regard. But I think the Americans also knew the importance. They knew the terrain better than anyone. It was, you know, that's where they were from, and they had a mastery of that, but they also were incredible with scouts and intelligence gathering and So their services and their capabilities were invaluable. The Americans, I'd like to give a shout out to first, even before we get to the Oneida and the Tuscarora, is the and I'm just here. I'm a Saturday morning. I need more coffee. The the last of the Mohegans is based on this, but it's the group that was out of Western Massachusetts that the Muncie Mohegan and Wappinger that made up the Stockbridge Militia. Sorry, I haven't everyone.
Oh, that's
I haven't had my Wheaties or cornflakes yet. So and so they were as brave as any patriot. They suffered mightily for the American cause.
Yep.
And you can't help but get emotional because they have a quote. One of their chiefs and leaders had said, in essence, we will fight shoulder to shoulder with you and we will lay our bones by your bones if we fall with you. And they did. So that down in the Bronx, they were later almost wiped out. And their last sachem was there, and their bravery was second to none. From the Stockbridge Militia, the three or so tribes that comprised them, and that alone is worthy of focus, because they were incredible allies and invaluable contributions. And then, you know, the Oneida, who run Turning Stone Casino now to this day. And their contributions in the Mohawk Valley and during the siege of Fort Stanwix and the battle, one of the bloodiest battles of the war, the Battle of Oriskany, that occurred on August 6, 1777. They are our first ally, even before the French. And they in the Tuscarora, their bravery. And then, you know, a number of them went down to Valley Forge during some of our bleakest hours and dined with George and Martha Washington, but helped mitigate and ameliorate the hunger and starvation of our troops at Valley Forge.
Yeah.
And they were recognized by New York State's government and the initial Congress, Continental Congress, and later for their vital contributions to the cause. So we can never forget the Stockbridge Militia or the Tuscarora and the Oneida.
Yeah. One of my favorite movies is The Last of the Mohegans with Daniel Day-Lewis. Mm-hmm. And I think that shows the fortitude that the Indians had in fighting the English and what they had to put up with in traveling. I just think that movie is one of the saddest to me towards the end. Yes. That,
Well, I think that movie ties in what was to come. The Last of the Mohegans really connotes or is a harbinger for their fate for a number of them and during the American Revolution. And first, let's pause. Why do we want to do a movie? I'm a romantic. Who doesn't love a good movie? Now, we started this project before the streaming revolution. I was thinking about the project back to 2007 or 8, but we really got started in earnest in 2012. And then things would be a big deal in the box office, and then later it would come out on DVD. You know, and sure, some of your listeners probably chuckle, but, you know, we're living through great transformations in the technology and how content is shared. But for your listeners, the younger listeners, a great epic movie, motion picture, was part of the American experience itself, that genre. And so, to your point, we want this film ultimately to be on par with Last of the Mohegans, Dances with Wolves, and other classics such as that, with an amazing soundtrack, with all the cinematography and the like, because we feel this history demands it. And that's where I alluded to it earlier, but the revolution was started in New England. And then everyone may, of course, know that it was largely secured. The culminating victory was at Yorktown in October of 1781. But it was in upstate New York in late 1776 and throughout 1777 that we can say it unabashedly. I can say this even for our current governor, but past governors, we have not done a sufficient job in New York State in commemorating and celebrating our Revolutionary War history. We know we made vital, you know, the French and Indian War was here, and of course later on the Civil War, but we are second to none. Massachusetts and Pennsylvania and Virginia have bested us in this regard, but no more. And that's why I commend the Saratoga 250th Commission and others. We know our place now in American history, the contributions we made. When people cross in it, or up and down the Hudson Valley, down to West Point, of course, but certainly when you cross, we say, let's also for your listeners, the Twin Bridges is a nickname. That bridge is dedicated to Colonel Thaddeus Kosciuszko.
Right.
And people must know who he is. And there's also a bridge in Brooklyn named to him, and there's a mustard named for him, and many other things. There's even a mountain in Australia named for him. And he was a hero in Belarus and Lithuania and Poland.
And but there is a plaque on the Twin Bridges.
The Twin Bridges.
With his
but
name.
His contributions, and he was second in command in engineering, as Eric Schnitzer would often point out, but his contributions at the battles of Saratoga in this region, and even as he helped many Americans evacuate from Fort Ticonderoga as it fell in 1777, some of the innovations and contributions he made there. But he alone, like with Daniel Morgan, these are fascinating people that we must understand their stories, their leadership abilities, and their contributions.
Yeah.
But it's remarkable, and it's worthy of our time and our attention and our scholarship. And I encourage, look, I want to pause and also say to the parents out there, take your time to go visit our state parks and our national parks.
And bring your children.
And bring your kids. And bring their friends. And scout leaders, if you're not planning in 4-H. Like, I grew up in an era where these civic organizations mattered. The Elks and the Lions and the Rotary and the 4-H and the Scouts.
Our Kiwanis.
And Kiwanis, all of them. And we need that fabric is what knit together our communities. We first have to have strong families and then strong communities and strong states, and then we get to a strong nation, as we did in the Revolution. But this is the time where we must reconnect the younger generations with our heroic origins.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. Because basically, our area saved the Revolution.
Period, hard stop.
Yeah.
We don't have to, it's not a hyperbole. It's not an exaggeration.
No.
It's fact.
It's fact.
And we owe it to those who served and sacrificed. One of the reasons why, I think, let's talk about why maybe New York State in particular wasn't given its due. You alluded to it earlier. George Washington, His Excellency, the indispensable man, was not present at the battles of Saratoga and a lot of the history that occurred during 1777. And so later on, we lionized Washington rightfully for his example and all that he did. But maybe because of the shame of later Benedict Arnold's treason and or Horatio Gates, the commanding general, he later fled the field of battle, the Battle of Camden. So maybe there was shame around those two individuals, and so we began to celebrate less Saratoga. But I do want to point out, we don't have to, there's two examples why we have to look to. We don't have to ourselves make our own assessment. Benjamin Franklin, who was over in France, and he was like a battlefield general. He was like an extra general for the revolutionary cause, given his prowess overseas with the French court. He ultimately had a coin minted by one of the great artisans of the day, and who was from Austria, but he had it done in Paris. But on that coin, he celebrates the iconic or seminal victories at Saratoga and Yorktown. So there were other victories. He didn't put Princeton and Trenton on there and others. And those were important.
Mm-hmm.
He put Saratoga and Yorktown.
Hmm.
And what are the two battles and the two victories that are featured in the Capitol Rotunda in the United States Capitol? Saratoga and Yorktown. Of course, the crossing of the Delaware, but all, as well, and then the signing of the Declaration. But those things were the first time, two times in history, that a British army was forced to surrender on the field of battle,
yeah.
Saratoga and Yorktown.
And Yorktown,
but
yeah.
Let me give one other a quick plug. And I too need to learn more about this. There's so much to delve into, and I'm so grateful to have the experience and exposure I've had to this area over the last two decades. But a battlefield letter emerged a few years ago. And it was the Robb Institute, I think, that brought this to light. And they really are a great custodian of historical documents and treasures. Washington penned a letter immediately after the victory of Saratoga was brought to his attention. This alone should be the subject of a short film. But men or women, whomever, got on horseback, and as soon as Burgoyne surrendered, they must have ridden all night, and somehow they closed the great expanse between where Burgoyne had surrendered, right above the Hudson, and got down to Washington's encampment outside of Philadelphia. Washington gets the news, and then he pens a letter to another fellow general. So we have Washington's words about what happened in Saratoga. Now, Washington had just suffered a series of crushing defeats, not just bruising. The Battle of the Brandywine in Germantown, Paoli Massacre. The American experiment, the American Revolution, was hanging in the balance. The flame of the sacred fire of liberty was flickering.
Yeah.
It was about to be extinguished. And then there was Saratoga, the jubilant victory, the unexpected victory at Saratoga, the complete victory, as Colonel Weddle puts it and others, where Burgoyne was forced and his entire army forced to surrender. Washington ascribes it to divine providence. For your listeners, the glorious work that we have in hand, he calls the revolution.
No.
So I just said, psychologically, not just for Washington and his army, but for all of the patriots.
Exactly.
We cannot overstate or underestimate the victory at Saratoga meant to the nation.
Well, you know, I sell replica coins, and it's coin sets, and one of my favorite are coins of the revolution, and one of my favorite coins is the Continental Dollar. But my take is that with the defeats that Washington was suffering, like you said, that was a turning point of our downward spiral. That could have been the end of the war for us.
I think everyone has to. There were many turning points or key inflection points during the war. And some historians may not be comfortable saying definitively that there was the turning point. I'm willing to do it because it's not up to us individually. Let's face it, Benjamin Franklin had been in France for a year. And as charming as he was, and they were intrigued by him, he did not prevail until news of the battles of Saratoga, Burgoyne's surrender on October the 19th, October the 17th, pardon me, Yorktown was the 19th. When word reached France on December the 6th, France recognized us as a sovereign nation by around the 17th of December. Now, the treaties followed in early 1778, and then they were later ratified by the Continental Congress. But word didn't reach back to America until early February of 1778 that the French were on board completely with two very comprehensive treaties, one military and one for commerce and the like. But they were all in, and then it went from a colonial conflict then to ultimately a world war. But what did the Americans do? See, this is another example where I think we have really not explained to our contemporaries in the last, 50 to 100 years, the significance of the victory at Saratoga. Samuel Adams, after that victory, the Continental Congress had fled Philadelphia, and they were now in York, Pennsylvania. They would ultimately go to Annapolis, Maryland. There was even a smallpox epidemic. So they were really in hiding and on the run, if you will. But they had the presence of mind, and my understanding was this resolution was unanimous. But they decided. Now, there had been individual days of Thanksgiving going back to the Massachusetts Bay Colony. There had never been an entire national day of Thanksgiving and praise. And it was religious in terms. It wasn't secular.
Right.
They were thanking Almighty God. And what happened, what the resolution they called December 17th, and maybe I'm historians, might have been December 18th, but they called for a national day of thanksgiving and praise. That was the Continental Congress. And so then all 13 colonies on that date observed. But General Washington also issued general orders for the Continental Army, all the Continental forces to observe that day as well. So here you had citizens in the states and the military on one day giving solemn thanksgiving and praise for what? For the victory at Saratoga.
Yeah.
Because it gave the belief that
we could do
that. We could prevail.
You know, when you go out to the battlefield, a lot of people think that the Battle of Saratoga was fought in Saratoga Springs, and that's not the case.
Right.
It was the village, the town of Saratoga out in Stillwater.
Right.
But when you go out there and you see the rolling hills and that, you got to remember that a lot of people that took part in that battle were farmers and homesteaders and, a lot of professional soldiers. Mm. But you had a lot of common people that were involved in that.
Well, let's pause on that because that's an incredibly important point. I'm going to just, for the sake of brevity, but for your listeners, once the American Army, the Continental Army that was arrayed in the Northern Department in upstate New York, in late August, early September of 1777, it was roughly a 1-to-1 ratio with Burgoyne's force. So what happened? How was it that we were able to force Burgoyne's surrender? How were we able to defeat a British army for the first time? Now, most of the fighting, there were two battles. One was the Battle of Freedom's Farm on September 19th, 1777, and there was the Battle of Bemis Heights on October the 7th. And the first one was a British victory on September 19th at Freedom's Farm, but it was very costly. But the Americans still held the high ground at Bemis Heights. But then the Americans had a very decisive victory on October the 7th. And although much of the fighting, or most of the fighting, was done by regular Army Continental forces, that's not why Saratoga is so significant. This is a very important point. And we often focus too much simply on Freeman's Farm and Bemis Heights. No, the big story is we forced a British army to surrender for the first time in history. Burgoyne, once it went very badly at Bemis Heights, he started to retreat, very clearly trying to go back to Fort Ticonderoga, and then ultimately up to Quebec. Why were we able to completely surround, cut off, completely surround, and force the surrender? And the answer is, I don't want to say it's simple, but it's because it was the first surge in American history. Some historians may want to grapple with that. Washington's call to arms, mostly to New England militia units, comprised of citizen soldiers, volunteers. See, a lot of times folks want to get into the moniker of state militia units. These were ordinary citizens.
That's right, farmers.
And most of the Continental Army were volunteers, and they signed up to be under contract, but they were also citizen soldiers.
Sure.
So we often make this a little bit more formal than it was, in a sense that they did acquire great discipline over time and matured as a fighting force, but there was a massive turnout. So that we went from a 1-to-1 ratio over a 6 to 8 week period to a 3-to-1 ratio. That was determinative. We do not cut off John Burgoyne, General John Burgoyne, and surround his entire army with merely the Continental Army. We did it with and there were some New York forces that turned out, but it was, we have to thank the New Englanders, I like to say, were thanking us for helping at the end of the Boston siege. They came back and they knew. There's a film at the Saratoga Visitor Center at the Saratoga National Historical Park that goes back to the early 2000s, and it's called Something More at Stake. And I think there was a realization at that moment, as we talked about, what was in the balance. It was the American Revolution itself.
Yep.
So they turned out en masse, and because they knew, and I call, many of people call it, but the spirit of don't tread on me. There was a collective voice that said, you will tread no further down the Hudson Valley. You're not going to take Albany.
We have a couple minutes to go, and there's so much more to talk about because one of the things I wanted to talk about, and we don't have time today, was that most people think the war was done in 1776, but there were many years after that. What about the movie? How's it going?
Well, we have a wonderful screenplay. I want to first pause to remember Dr. James Kirby Martin, who I met back in 2017 initially. I went to a meeting at the History Department at the United States Military Academy at West Point that was convened by Colonel Sean Scully. And it was from there that we were able to get Dr. Martin and a wonderful screenwriter of great renown, Bob Burris, to write the screenplay. So we've invested heavily in this project. I want you know, up and down the Hudson Valley and the Champlain Valley, we have a first-rate screenplay that is historically accurate that would do great justice to this story. And so we have a wonderful website, 1777.org. Our social media is at 77 Turning Point. But we are ready, but we need investment. And we've tried crowdfunding, but we do need backing of great individuals of great means. But the imperative is that this project must be brought to fruition, and it needs the help of all across upstate New York and beyond.
Yeah, I think what we're looking for is common folks donating whatever they can, just like we did during the Revolutionary War.
And look, people are skeptical. You know, I'm an attorney and I'm an Army veteran. The money will be well spent. We have very reputable people involved, and I've put up close to, I'll say for your listeners, $300,000 of my own money. We have no debt. And so we're so committed to this. I don't own a home because of this. Yeah. I went off from paying off my law school loans to this endeavor. But so that's how much I'm invested. And we really believe this needs to be brought to fruition. We believe it will change the arc of heritage tourism and economic development in the larger region if this is brought to fruition.
Okay. We can get more into that because you're going to be on again. And if you want to bring somebody else with you to...
Absolutely. Thank
you. Gel this and talk about it. You're always welcome here because this is my favorite subject. And
can I just put one final plug? We have a new director at the New York State Military Museum, Colonel Richard or Rich Goldenberg. And so the museum is free. And we're part of the nonprofit that supports the museum. But we want to thank the Division of Military and Naval Affairs and the Office of the Adjutant General, Major General Ray Shields. But I hope to meet some of you at the New York State Military Museum itself.
Okay, and the show is always loaded on SaratogaBroadcasting.com, and it'll be up on YouTube. So,
Rick, Mark, thank you.
Thank you for being here today.
Thanks to your listeners as well.
It's appreciated.
Yeah.